And I realized, like, I've always had this fear of missing out on something, you know? So I'm like wired 24/7, you know, for data. So I just the fear of missing out is like, I can't do it. So it's like, I don't want to take a break. I love this stuff. So I always say, like, I've lived an unfair life just because all the passion I have just for, you know, maybe for sports or athletics or anything I did in the past, now I get to put it all into this, and it's all I do 24/7. So it's a dream.
I'm Clayton Collins, CEO at Housing Wire and your host for the Powerhouse Podcast. And today I am joined by the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Logan Modishami, the charts guy. Logan, welcome to Powerhouse.
It is wonderful to be here. It's been a long time since you and I have done a podcast together.
It certainly has. And today, Logan, we're going to focus our time a little bit different than you usually do with Sarah at other podcasts or CNBC interviews. We're going to talk about the man, Logan Modishami, your evolution into becoming the lead analyst in the housing industry. We're going to talk a little bit about data, talk about some current market dynamics, and we'll tease out some other stuff at the end. But I really want to focus on you, Logan. I'm thrilled to have you here. And I think we have a unique opportunity to help show the audience other sides of the lead analyst at Housing Wire, Logan Modishami.
Yeah, it's been a crazy journey for me to get to this spot. For people who don't know, our family's been in banking since the late 1950s. This is kind of all we do. My father used to run the Bank of America's in Santa Monica, Beverly Hills, and Newport Beach. And then he opened up his own mortgage company in 1987. And then in 1996, I started helping out with the office. But I was going to be a high school basketball coach. In the last century, I studied history. I was going to be a high school basketball coach, and that's it. And then I saw my starting salary, $26,000, living in Irvine. Not going to happen. Got into finance. And then in 2010... Jason Resnick from Benzinga asked me if I wanted to write about political economics. I'm like, hell no, I hate politics, but I can write about real estate. And that event spawned this, in a sense, 14-year journey to get to this spot here today, which was never planned at all. So it has been so much fun. I've lived literally the most privileged life ever. If I die 10 seconds from now, it's an unfair life. So it's so much fun for me to be a data analyst and doing everything I do, because then the big nerd in me always gets to come out daily, and that's like a joy forever.
I've never seen that original content from 14 years ago on Benzinga. Have you gone back and read some of your early real estate analysis?
It's hilarious because back then, I was just doing commentary stuff. So I had this whole kind of big macro theme for the whole decade that we were going to have the weakest housing recovery ever, and we're not going to get these certain metrics until years 2020 to 2024. But I wrote it in a more commentary form. And Sarah said, you know what, I'm going to go read some of this stuff. And she read it. And I wrote so differently back then. And she was like, oh my God, you are a wonderful writer. This is great stuff. And then she read another one, and it's so different than what I do now. So she was like amazed. She's like, you're holding back. I said, no, that was commentary. And around 2014, 2015, I said, listen, there's so much bad information out there. And a lot of this was like battling with Russian trolls all the time. Then I thought, okay, we're going to make this a pure data analytical, but we have to talk about the economic cycle first, then housing. So I changed everything up, incorporated charts to everything I do. And that just kind of led to, you know, our talk late in 2019. You know, do I want to write, you know, maybe one or two articles for Housing Wire? And here we are. But yeah, Sarah read the old stuff and she was like it's a totally different person back then to compare to what I am now.
It's a difference between commentary and analysis, but I remember your early days at Housing Wire. I think some of the initial articles that you started working with Sarah on were like 5,000 words with 50 charts. And Sarah's like, oh my God, what do I do with this?
Yeah. It's part of it is realizing that, I mean, if it was up to me, these things would be like big dissertations all the time. And it's just, that's just not how the world operates. So you have to write for your audience. And even for Housing Wire, I changed my writing style, you know, kind of in the last year to make things sharper, quicker, and things that people can understand in a very quick fashion that they could actually explain. See, if I do my job right, I always say people could finish my sentences and they could actually, you know, talk about economics. And that's the high school basketball coach in me. That's the historian in me trying to teach, because if you could teach people, you know, then they don't have to listen to crazy people all the time. And that's really the primary goal.
So you definitely do take an educator's tone in your content, whether you're writing or on a podcast or on TV. And that's really powerful. But if we go back to your days as an originator, were you leveraging your commentary, your analysis, your analytical skills, and how you communicated with borrowers and referral partners? Can you give us a glimpse into how those two parts of your life intertwined at that time?
So the funny thing is that a lot of this stuff started on Twitter, and where a media network started to see my work on Twitter. But I used to always go on the CNBC comment section and, you know, comment on things. And what happened was more and more people started to recognize me as someone talking about economics rather than being a loan officer. So I actually did the numbers on it. The amount of clients that I got from all the social media stuff ended up becoming like $257,000 worth of loans, you know, just getting my name out there. And it wasn't really kind of my intention. I just really loved doing this stuff. I remember in 2014, mortgage originator, the news work, kind of did a piece on me in Irvine, like, you know, social media star does, you know, leverages this to get clients. But the funny part, it was really kind of never about that. You know, that's why I think it's everyone else is doing exactly what they should do with social media, with their work as an LO, is promoting their business. But here I was talking about economics, never like even talking about loans. I would not quote rates or anything like that. So a lot of people didn't even know I was a loan officer. But as time grew, a lot of people just, okay, you know, hey, I got a friend here, a family member in California, because we were in Orange County. So it did bring me loans. But really, the thing is, the honest truth, I didn't do it for that. I just love this stuff, you know? So it was like the day-to-day battle, but how relentless I am. Like, I do this 24/7. Like, I'm like tweeting charts at 11 at night. I'm getting up at like 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, we know you do. I was going to ask you about hobbies, but I don't think that's necessary, because we know it's housing economics.
I am, even when I'm like on a vacation, you know, even if I'm in the Caribbeans or anything, I am there. I don't stop. Like, the fear is stopping to me. It'd be like a fearful thing. Like a really good story is, like, in high school, when we're all graduating, everybody got these awards, and they said, here's the award for the person that got the most attendance. And I'm like, here I am, captain of the basketball team. I'm sitting with all the jocks. I'm like, what idiot loser guy got that award? And they're like, you know, oh, show me. And I'm like, everyone's laughing at me. And I realized, like, I've always had this fear of missing out on something, you know? So I'm like wired 24/7, you know, for data. So I just the fear of missing out is like, I can't do it. So it's like, I don't want to take a break. I love this stuff. So I always say, like, I've lived an unfair life just because all the passion I have just for, you know, maybe for sports or athletics or anything I did in the past, now I get to put it all into this, and it's all I do 24/7. So it's a dream.
Okay, so we're starting to understand a little more about Logan here. There's this internal drive not to miss anything that happens in the markets, and I think that's one of the things that attracts a lot of us, like myself, to media and financial markets, because it never stops. It's a machine that keeps on going, and you do start to feel that fear of missing out emotion if, like, you're not watching for the next big thing that's happening or that next data line. How do you manage this 24/7 market? And, like, you're watching global indicators. We're going to talk about inflation in a few minutes, which has, like, so many global, like, how do you manage that as with the rest of your life and get rest and sleep and stay healthy? Like, you seem to be able to do it all.
You know, there's something on my wall here that says running on no sleep, you know, and I've had that poster for, I think, maybe like 15 years. Fortunately for myself, I'm actually extremely healthy. I train 24/7. And because of my health, I can actually have very long days that I don't get tired. And my brain is always wired to anything because of technology now. You know, 30, 15 years ago, you couldn't get information like this. Now, because of this vehicle, I can get wired to global markets, U.S. markets, anything out here. And it's like my brain has the 10-year yield attached on one here and then the commodities market. You know, there's it just never stops. But also you have to have, you know, the physical ability to want to do this. And part of it is it's the mental attitude. I always think the mental attitude you have to have first. So I always joke with people. I said, think of me as a strong safety in football. And all I see is one overrated tight end who talks a lot of trash that I know is soft. That every single day I wake up in the morning, when that guy comes down the middle, I am going to knock him on his ass so everyone gets to see. I literally have that like mindset. That's the athlete in me where you want to win. There's a lot of people who look terrible, but they want attention. Like they don't mind losing as long as they get attention. Like I would swallow my own vomit if I was that person. Like, that's just not me. We like grew up wanting to win all the time and we don't want to be like that. So there's a mindset that you have to have mentally, but you also have the physical ability to do this stuff because people think, oh, wow. Listen, trust me, doing this stuff 24/7, you got to have enough juice in you to do it, but you also have to have the mental attitude that you do this to want to give the right information and you want to win. Nobody is a perma anything. If anybody has models, right? Cycles come, cycles go. You correlate the future data. You try to get people, you try to connect the dots. But so much of our society is doom porn and everything's coming to an end and come see me. So in this sense, I was created because of them. It was like in 2015 that I said, okay, I have to change because there's so much bad information. So action, reaction, I was created because so much of the information was bad. And I feel obligated, enthusiastic, and I'm here 24/7 to battle this all the time until my very last breath. And I could not ask for a better life than this.
Logan, I was created. This almost feels like we're starting to like lay the groundwork for a superhero movie of how a Marvel comic book hero came to be.
At Housing Wire, we're obsessed with data and analytics. Without good insight, there's no shot at operational excellence or innovation. Mortgage lenders that want to thrive in today's market must have access to due diligence and valuation intel, risk management tools, and predictive analytics. And they have to cover everything from the asset to the enterprise. This is exactly what consolidated analytics does. If you want to make more informed decisions and optimize performance, you have to check out Consolidated Analytics. Visit consolidatedanalytics.com to start your journey toward more informed decision making.
Here's a hilarious story. My name, Logan, okay? It's not my birth name, right? When I became an American citizen in 1999, because I came to this country when I was one, there was a whole process to get my citizenship. But when I finally got it, I went there doing the last piece of paperwork before we have to do the few things. And they said, do you want to change your name? And I'm like, what? I can do that? And they're like, yeah, you can do that. I said, yes, call me Logan. And I was like, Logan? And they're like, okay. So Logan is the comic character Wolverine. When I grew up as a kid, that was my favorite character. So I love the name Logan. So you literally have to give the government the reason why you changed your name. So in my official paperwork, I said Wolverine of the X-Men. There it is. So my name is from the Marvel character comic Wolverine. And if people know who he is, there's a similar tone between us, right? So it's that tenacity and always wanting to win.
That is phenomenal. I was like, my next question was going to be, tell us something people don't know about Logan, but I think we just got there. I think we just got your like your immigration and name story and some serious inspiration into the person you are.
Yeah, if anybody like saw me as a basketball coach, I literally never sat down one time. Like in the 5-6 years I was coaching, I never sat down. I'm always back and forth running around, you know, telling. So there's a theme here, and a lot of it is, you know, my high school basketball coach told me like, Logan has unmatched enthusiasm, you know, and he just wants to win. So it's just kind of that mentality. Now that war has gone from athletics to economics. And that's why I bring it every single day. That's why I don't mind battling people every day, because I always say I'm ready to play ball 24/7.
Unmatched enthusiasm. That is quite the superlative. All right, Logan, let's talk housing data for a minute. So you track an infinite number of data sources, but I know there's a few data sources that you consider most important. What are the three most important data sources that a housing professional should be tracking to understand the market?
So one of the things that I was so excited about toward the end of 2020 is creating this tracker article, because even though I talk about it myself, I thought we needed to have a format on here. And there's basically this three data line sets that I believe everyone can follow, and everyone's in line with what's going on in housing. Takes all the speculation away. This is the real live data. When Altos Research and Housing Wire combined, the inventory data, in the sense that if you just track active inventory weekly, new listings data weekly, and the price cut percentages, it gives you a simple model to get you up to speed on what's happening today. Because the existing home sales report, the Case-Shiller report, all these things are simply too old, right? So I think that is the basic foundation. If you wanted to know where the supply and demand equilibrium is going, there, that's it. That's part of the tracker. Then number two, I'm a 10-year yield guy more than I am a mortgage guy. So I always say there's this lovely marriage between the 10-year yield and 30-year mortgage rates since 1971. They have been slow dancing together forever, and that's why I like to do those charts. Whatever drives a 10-year yield will drive mortgage rates. Now, the spreads could be good or bad, but they trend together. So every week, we talk about the 10-year yield. We talk about technical levels and key, and I know it's really geeky, but I think especially for the people that have been following us for the last 3 or 4 months, they can see why technical levels matter. You have to think like a bond trader and a quant trader, you know. So those things give you an idea of where mortgage rates are going. And last year, you know, we talked about how, oh my God, if the Fed gets hawkish right here, this could get out of hand. It got out of hand pretty quick. You know, mortgage rates shot up to 8%. The 10-year got to 5%. So mortgage purchase application data is the third one. Or the mortgage purchase application is the key variable, but it runs off what the 10-year yield does. So we like to track mortgage rates, the 10-year yield, and then the purchase application data. I think it's confusing to a lot of people because people think it's a one-to-one percentages with sales. It isn't. It's just a trend survey. So you need to keep like a year-to-date count. And this is what we've done at the end of kind of November of 2022 and the end of November 2023. We track the year-to-date data to give people perspective. And what occurred after November 9th, so people that follow our work, November 9th was a really, really key day for economics and for the economic cycle. Purchase application data stopped crashing. The forward-looking data got positive, and then it never really went anywhere. And I think so many people just don't have the training. They think home sales are still crashing. They're not. They're just basically bouncing. And this is a big part of my work, that it's really rare to go under 4 million. So purchase application data, 10-year yield, mortgage rates, active inventory, new listings, price cut percentages. We put them all in the tracker article. Then we talk about what's coming up in the economic data front, what can move the market. And then this way, everyone is on the same page of what the real data
is. That's the full picture. That is the full picture. It is not a simple one. There's a lot of moving pieces to truly understand the housing market. Where do you think professionals, so we're talking about loan originators, real estate agents, leaders who are talking to their teams, where do you think people go wrong in misinterpreting some of the housing market data? We're not going to go do like the Twitter troll bashing here. This is like professionals who are trying their hardest to explain the market, but might misunderstand some of the data.
I just had a real estate agent yesterday come and tell me, and she's like, she just got part of the tracker article and my work. And she's like, I cannot believe I wasn't introduced to you earlier. It shows that the real estate agents and the mortgage people that I was listening to were wrong. My thing is that if you're a professional, you want to work with real-time actual data. You don't want to work with old data, and you don't want to listen to people with, I would say, speculative ideological takes. And this way, I would say, math, facts, you know, story, you know, math and facts will tell you what's going on. But then there's the storytelling aspect. Stay away from the storytelling aspect and focus on actually authentic data, and make sure that data represents the reality of what we're dealing with. And I think what I've seen, I've got a lot of people to come to us because they see that, okay, there's something here. Look at the historical data lines. Look at to see if you're people. I remember I was at a Utah conference talking to mortgage professionals, and a person in the crowd is like, oh, but I listened to this person and this person, and she was very adamant. I said, well, your person's been wrong for 10 years. So why would you listen to somebody that's been wrong for 10 years? So you've been telling your clients bad information for a long time then. So I think you need to listen to people that actually show data, and you can back test it. Go back. I always say, go back and look at their forecasts and everything. And this way, the information you give to your clients is better. Now, one thing that's gone great, our nerd tour across the country, whenever we go to the events, I've realized so much of this data, nobody's ever seen. Like, they're like, what? Why? And getting that data and then explaining that reality to your clients, everybody tells me, I feel so much smarter. My clients feel so much better about the, you know, in this way, you're ahead of the game on a lot of people because you're just working with the live data instead of kind of like a speculative theory out there.
And I don't want to underestimate the importance of storytelling, though. So like the average loan originator and real estate professional, they're not going to go back and back test data. And that's not an insult. It's not their job. It's not their training. It's not where their time is best utilized. So like we can talk about like doing the analysis and back testing and watching real-time data, but ultimately, even me as an executive, I run a information services and data company. I'm not going back and back testing data. I'm hiring people like you, Logan, to like do that work and then review the work and trust that we're putting the right story forward so professionals and executives can go out, make decisions and guide and lead teams. So I think I don't want to underestimate the importance of telling a story because that's how most people consume information. Like they need a narrative. They need a storyline to remember the data points that I think naturally are stored in your head and your mind, or just harder for some people to like hold on to like the specific data points. The story is incredibly important.
And that's why our podcast has been a top 10 business news podcast for almost 2 years now. The podcasts allow me to tell the story verbally without the charts. And so many people have just, they enjoy the banter between Sarah and I, but we also try to keep things so simple in our storytelling that everyone could relate them. Like I always say, like if I'm doing my job right, people are finishing my sentences for me, right? If I'm doing my job right, everyone realizes, okay, I could feel confident about talking about it. And I think that's the podcast was a critical aspect in the storytelling of it. Because listen, trust me, charts aren't for everyone, man. It is just, it's economics done right should be very boring. It's not designed to be this fun, hot, sexy thing, right? It's boring, tedious work. So the podcast, I think, gives us the avenue to where I could show a little bit of my personality and tell you the story of economics in an entertaining way that people can relate to. And I think that's part of the success that we've had with the podcast. And part of it is, you know, a lot of times when big outlets get to interview us, we get a lot of new people. And then all everyone's like, wait a second, this is entertaining, fun, and informative, right? And I think that setup with the podcast and the tracker article together, boy, that's a lethal combination of information that's digestible and people can understand it.
Yeah, and I think you're spot on. And that's the great insight of how important the podcast is. And like actually telling the story of the data in a more simplified way than you can do when you have the crutch or detail or back test of the charts that we can do in the tracker. I often find for myself, if I'm needing to tell the story of how's the market, what Altos is so great at, I often end up needing to triangulate between listening to the podcast, reading the tracker, and listening and watching one of Mike's weekly webinars on active market data. But I need to triangulate those three things for me to get my story right. That's kind of kicking off some product ideas in my head of how we can make that faster for people so they don't have to triangulate the way I do.
I love talking about Mike's data lines at live events, you know, where I basically kind of tell people, listen, if you want to be behind the curve, then do what you were doing before. But if you want to be up to date with the real information, this is it. And you're missing out, but your competition isn't. We got a lot of people on that stuff. So you, if you want to be behind the curve, then go ahead. But here it is. And this is how it's looked for a very long time.
All right, Logan. So today, Friday, the last day of Q1 2024, we had a PCE drop. Give us a glimpse into this metric. What we learned today in the headlines.
So the inflationary data came in, I would say, a little bit better than expectations, because people were expecting for a little bit of hot number, but it was slightly below. It was very encouraging out there. The market isn't open right now, but I would imagine that the 10-year yield probably would have gone maybe a little bit lower off of this news. So remember, the one of the things I try to talk about in our podcast and articles, the history of global pandemics are very inflationary, and then the disinflation happens. So we have a two handle, PCE inflation, what the Fed tracks. That's their main things. Two handles on year over year, core PCE, headline PCE, the quarterly GDP PCE deflator is running exactly at 2%. So the inflation boom and disinflation has already happened. The next part is landing the plane. And I think I see the frustration in so many people that want to see a recession or something breaks. The inflation data is not reaccelerating like it can in the late 70s, right? So it's just, it's very difficult to have that unless you have a supply shock. We even did a podcast like what needs to happen to have the 70s inflation. So today's number was encouraging, even though it would come in hotter than what the trend is. But I think the Federal Reserve already has like an idea of that. And they kind of said, listen, we know what's going on here. So we're in another phase of the inflation story. And the next part is how many rate cuts do we get? And then going into actually 2025 will be even more interesting after those rate cuts are in. Because to me, it's all moves around economic data, right? We had mortgage rates fall because of the macro data back at the end of 2022 going into 2023, not because the Fed was done hiking. They were still in hike mode. So my job is to try to get people to understand the importance of inflation, the importance of economic data, the 10-year yield. What's the story here? Because it's crazy. It is just a crazy period, considering how stable everything was in the last decade. Not much was happening for a decade. Here, the violence of how economic data moves post-COVID has been challenging for me. It's been so much fun writing the COVID-19 recovery model on April 7th, 2020, and then highlighting why November 9th, 2022 was so important. But our job is to tell the story and give the information so people have a better idea on how to move forward.
You've had some bold market calls in the last few years, and they have been correct. I'm looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, I would even say the November 9th call in 2022 was kind of even more important than the COVID. COVID was such a historical shock that we were so depressed in all economic activity that it didn't really matter. We were gone. That was a no-brainer. November 9th, 2022, boy, it was all hell was breaking loose, and we're trying to like thread a needle, you know, in between all that chaos. So that was a more complicated call. But yeah, I mean, we're here in 2024. There's no recession. Home prices aren't crashing or anything like that. We just have rates too high. Just get low rates. Like I talked about on CNBC yesterday. If you could just get rates in the low sixes, things could go. The government doesn't have to do these, you know, tax credits or anything. So hopefully in time, we land the plane, mortgage rates come down a little bit lower, and we could progress forward as a country.
I was just listening to, you know, you and I share an interest and love for another podcast in the industry, or not industry, financial markets, Animal Spirits, by Ben and Michael. And I was listening to their episode this morning. They were talking about the roaring 20s and all the metrics that are showing that the 2020s are a lot like the 1920s in terms of just economic success. And I'm like, the one thing we don't have is mortgage interest rates that are cooperating so the housing market can participate in this roaring 20s period as we see stock indexes hit all-time highs.
You know, we wrote about that actually like 2.5 years ago, you know, how the backdrop here could be like the roaring 20s as well. And, you know, this is a very unique cycle. But again, the United States of America is outperforming the world for a very simple reason. We have better demographics than China, Japan, and Europe. And our household balance sheets just look a lot better. These are things that I've been a staple of my work for the last 10 years. And we just ran into this unique cycle. And a lot of these recession models or anything like this, they're things that are incorrect about them. And our job, again, when the data starts to get into that really, really negative spot for the U.S. economy, we'll be able to see it. We highlight data like this. But I think the surprise of what's happened in 2022 and 2023 really shocked people. And I hope people understand that you should listen to people that get it more right than wrong.
Yep. All right. So, Logan, when you started this nerd tour and have been going all around the country speaking at Realtor Association and NBA Association and corporate events, it's been awesome. We've brought so many new people into the housing market ecosystem, and we've been able to talk to a lot of the companies and associations that are enterprise members of or enterprise subscribers to Housing Wire, which is a really cool way to engage our core audience. But when you started this tour, I said, Logan, go out and talk to the world. But when it comes to the gathering, which we have coming up in a few weeks, you better bring the heat and bring some new insights to stage. I don't want you saying the same thing on our stage you've said on every other stage in the country over the last year. So you bringing some heat to Scottsdale?
Yeah, there's going to be a unique format to how we're going to show what the current data is going out for the rest of the year. And there's going to be some new charts that I brought into the presentation. And I would tell you this, just showing people some of the new charts that they haven't seen, the utter shock of like looking at data for the first time and trying to explain what's going on and, you know, what the Fed's trying to do. And, you know, we're in a better spot now. I think that informs a lot of people to go out and then talk to their clients or their coworkers, or I would say Uncle Dave, you know. And I think the gathering is going to be an updated version on what's happening this year going out to 2024, but not only that, but also 2025, you know. And I think that's how forward looking we're doing this year and next year, and trying to present a colorful way of explaining economics that everyone could relate to, and then everyone could talk about it. And again, it's My job is just to basically transform what I think the data is telling us. Not, I don't want to tell people what they want to hear. And I think a lot of times the last year, what I've seen is that a lot of people got information that they wanted to hear. And like, trust me, I didn't want to do the Gandalf line. I didn't want to have mortgage rates stop at that level.
No, team higher rates was not a popular story for a while, but turned out to be pretty spot on.
Being team higher rates 2021 and 2022 was not popular. But also, you know, saying that I don't think mortgage rates could go below this level, that I have to bring Gandalf the Grey out because you guys all can relate to, you shall not pass. And look, that level stuck. So I'm going to tell you the truth, and I'm going to tell people what to follow, because when this turns, I could tell you this right now, we have about 4.2 to 4.7 million missing buyers now with the third calendar year of sales this year. And people are...
Wait, sorry. Explain that. What do you mean by 4.2 million missing buyers?
So if we take the demographics of housing in years 2020 to 2024, of course, COVID happened in this period of time I've been waiting for. The amount of buyers that should be here between this three-year period of 2022, 2023, and 2024, we're missing about 4.2 to 4.7 million aggregate buyers within a three-year time frame. So if rates fall, we have people sitting here that just waiting to come in. Now, also, I could prove this because at the end of 2022 and the end of 23, mortgage rates just made one move lower and we had bounces in sales, you know, over 500,000, you know, just that little move in rates, you know, in aggregate demand brought us over 1 million more home sales. Imagine if rates, like when I went on CNBC yesterday, I talked about, if rates range between like 4.75 and 5.875 for like 12 to 18 months, the aggregate pool of home buyers, that it goes up. So you just have more buyers into the mix. Right now, we're just getting these marginal home buyers to come in when rates fall. But if rates fall with a duration, that pool of home buyers come in and it grows a lot. In fact, one of the things I'm worried about is that this has been going on for so long that pool is getting better and bigger. And I've never been a pent-up demand guy. I've always thought that's a weird concept. But here, it's just we have people waiting, and just a little bit of lower rates, getting to 5.99% or even 6.5%, it draws these people to come in right away. Imagine a lower for longer mortgage rate period with people can plan and go, okay, I feel more comfortable now. Because part of the problem is having rates so volatile, going from 3 to 6, 6 to 5, 5 to 7.5. It's not a functioning market. I mean, 2022 showed that it was the fastest collapse in sales ever. But man, we get lower rates for longer, then people can start planning and doing it. And then we progress as a country, because that's what we've done, like I've always said, since the Peloponnesian War.
Logan, phenomenal conversation. I'm excited to see you in a few weeks in Scottsdale for the gathering. Events are a big commitment for our audience. Like it's time, it's resources. It's not cheap, but we are making a commitment that our guests are going to get actionable insights, actionable intelligence. I know you're going to be a big part of us delivering on that commitment. So I'm pumped to have you on stage.
Yeah, and I get to see my fellow nerds, Odetta from First American and Daryl from Redfin. And it's not just my presentation. We're going to have an onstage discussion with Odetta, Sarah, and I. So it's going to be fun. I can't wait, because talk about a time in like history where you actually need to know what's going on, especially in 2024. It'll be very informative, but very fun.
All right, Logan, thank you for your time. Thank you for sharing more of your story, a glimpse into the man behind the charts guy. To our powerhouse audience, thank you all for tuning in today. I'm excited to see many of you at the gathering in a few weeks. For those of you that are celebrating, I hope you have a great Easter weekend. We are signing off, and thank you. Have a great one.